You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome to the show. You are listening to the Rational Revolution here on the Civic Media Network. I am your host, Mark Becker. Hey, thanks for finding us again. Many thanks to last week, my friend, colleague, and now apparently my gynecologist, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, for coming on the show. If you feel like that was an inside joke and you missed out, well, you can head over to civicmedia.us. where that episode, along with every other episode from this and every one of our shows, is available at your fingertips, civicmedia.us. So check it out. But this week we're going to get right to it. I am proud to have frequent flyer. I'm joined once again by my dear friend, former GOP strategist, political insider, all around wonderful guy, your favorite Southern gentleman, Mr. Carlton Huffman, is back. What's up, buddy?
It has been an interesting time since we last spoke. I know it feels like the country is going the way my Duke men's basketball.
I know.
Chances went. That one was a very painful weekend on that end. But we've also seen some signs of hope since we last spoke. Susan Crawford was able to win that decisive victory in the state Supreme Court race. And I've just got to tell Wisconsin voters, I mean, I know y'all probably get tired of the commercials and the text messages. But you don't know how good it felt for the rest of the country to be able to look at you guys, and y'all got to blow off some steam for last week. We have to wait at best until this November just for local and municipal elections, and until next November before we can weigh in and actually push back. But Wisconsin definitely got the job done, and you guys were an inspiration to just see Elon light $25 million up in smoke.
Yes. That was fun. You know, and the last time you were here was like 5 months ago. We did a recap on the election. I didn't realize it was that long. It's been a minute. And so much has happened.
Blinked, and there's like five different things happening all at the same time. And so it's hard to pick out what's going on. But I consider and say, I know if you're a person who has stake in the stock market, whether it's a 401k, whether it is, just basic investments, I mean, we have seen like over $6 trillion just go up in smoke. And
yeah.
In the past, whenever these things happened, I mean, the economy goes up, the economy goes down. That's just like the sun going up and down. Mm-hmm. It's natural. But this is probably the first time in U.S. history that we have had a self-owned goal on this one, all due to the President of the United States. He actually believes in one thing, and that has been throughout his career, he has been consistent. He is willing to bend on immigration. He's willing to bend on gun control and abortion. But tariffs, that is the closest thing to religion that this man has found, and we're all paying the price for it.
And I don't understand it. And I want to talk about tariffs in a little bit, because like I don't understand like the fascination, and it, you know, it's, we'll talk about that in a second. But you mentioned Susan Crawford. Like how was that perceived down by you? Because where are you now? Tell our listeners where you're hailing from.
Yeah, still in my home state of North Carolina, here in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. And I know that there was a perception that Elon was making a difference in a positive way on behalf of Brad Schemmel, and there was a little bit of nervousness. I mean, I was eagerly texting a few folks up there, turnout numbers in Dane County and Milwaukee, and amazingly, it seemed like across the board, Democrats did what they needed to do. Susan Crawford got more votes than Scott Walker did.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize that.
And you've seen a lot of, I won't name names, but there's some normal MAGA and conservative folks in Wisconsin trying to poo-poo the results, saying that they're not that big of a turnout. It was as big a turnout as a midterm election. And there was
that's crazy.
All the money spent on behalf of Brad Schemmel. And the fact was, he still lost by double digits. It was the same as it was for Janet Protasiewicz. And the Republicans were basically saying, we just need to turn out 60% of Trump voters and we'll win. Well, that about 62% of Trump voters in Wisconsin from last November. But Susan Crawford turned out over 70% of Kamala's voters. So it was an amazing job by both activists and the state Democrat Party to get this thing done.
It was interesting, you know, to because I think sometimes in Wisconsin we're almost in a bubble, you know, of like, because there's so much in when these elections happen, there's so much noise and so much. So it's like, okay, we were inundated with it. How much did people outside of the area know about this? How much did people understand that, like, this was the first battle test for Donald Trump and Elon Musk? And like, how it's hard to kind of set yourself outside of the area to really grasp, okay, was this really a big deal? How big of a deal was it, you know?
It was a, I mean, this was the first significant L that Trump, MAGA, and Elon have taken since the election. And for the first few weeks, it seemed like Trump was the steamroller and the unstoppable force just moving through American politics. And you heard a lot of his apologists and supporters basically saying that he's a force of nature, that there is no stopping this. But we saw it in 2017. Yeah. Whenever the resistance first rose up, they started to push back, but they didn't get many outright wins until Virginia in November of 2017.
Yeah, that's right.
Out the gate on April 1st, the resistance in Wisconsin put a big win on the board, and then followed up by, I mean, it was in conjunction with Cory Booker's filibuster in the Senate, broke the Strom Thurmond record, put a good record of something to filibuster against. And then you saw the April 5th protest around the country. So there is something churning in the water, and you are just seeing it with Trump's approval rating on the economy and across the board. And it's not just Trump's approval. Republican Party as a whole is taking on water on the most critical issue to voters. They voted for him this last November because he promised, we're going to bring inflation down, we're going to get grocery prices under control, and instead he is blowing all that out of the water along with public confidence in what he promised to deliver.
Well, and it's funny because, like, what was it, just this week it was where Elon said, well, you know, we were talking about $2 trillion. We're really going to be like around $150 million in savings. So it's like all that stuff was just BS. And then, you know, and then in those numbers, it's like, even though that's crap, because it's like numbers that, like, contracts that he just is not going to pay, or, you know, so it's weird. And we're inching closer to that 100-day mark. I think it's at the end of this month. And I look at, you know, since you were here, what has happened? And I, like, the tone was so darkly set on day one, where he granted clemency for that, like, 1,600 people who were on trial for January 6th. And it has all gone downhill since then. You know,
it's something that we knew, and I think you and I talked about it. I mean, we knew it was going to be bad. There were certain things that we knew he said that he was going to do. We predicted the January 6th people were going to get the pardons. We predicted the tariffs. We predicted that Ukraine was going to get thrown under the bus and Vladimir Putin was going to be empowered by it. The one thing I will sit there and say that we probably missed and underestimated was just the sledgehammer that Elon took. And you can sit there and say they saved $150 billion, but how much is this actually costing us? I mean, the opportunity costs around the world, whenever it comes to the goodwill that we bought with USA, that's going to be filled by China, or it's going to be filled by other adversaries of the United States. When it comes to the CDC, the Health and Human Services, we've got a measles outbreak that is basically the first one in 20 plus years that we have in the United States. And all that this administration can point to as a success is we renamed the Gulf of Mexico. That is
At the end. Well, and then, like, the rest of the world's like, no, you didn't. And I'm glad I just flicked the camera. I'm glad that it was under my name so no one saw it. But, you know, but, like, it's stuff like that. And what surprised me, because I talked to, I mean, everybody that I talked to on the show when we were talking about January 6th, I don't think anyone really predicted that every single person just about would get a pardon. And so that surprised me. Which it shouldn't have, but I didn't realize, like, how bad and the depths of scum. You know, I didn't realize how bad it was going to get. What has surprised you about all of this so far?
I would sit there and say just the simple fact that we are trumpeting Russian and Kremlin talking points and talking about the war in Ukraine. I mean, I did predict that NATO was going to be under severe duress, if not going to be torn asunder. I think the fact that we are trashing a number of our alliances in Asia, that is something that I was like unpleasantly surprised about. I would also just sit here and say the fact that the Republicans in Congress are willing to sit there, and I want to single out two particularly in Wisconsin, because thanks to the election of Susan Crawford, we might get some new congressional math. Brian Stile and Derek Van Orden. I can't speak for Derek Van Orden knowing better because he is a moron, but I can hear say that Brian Stile is smart enough to know better.
Yes, he
knows how much business is done in the first district. He knows how much the farmers are affected by these tariffs. The fact that they are willing to roll over as these USAID contracts are terminated, and this is American farmers, these are Wisconsin farmers, growing crops that are being paid for and sent overseas, those things are getting ripped up and Wisconsinites are getting hurt. And the fact that Republicans in Congress are willing to sit there and watch their constituents, their voters get hurt and basically say little to nothing about it has probably been the most surprising thing that I've seen out of the reaction to the Trump administration.
Yeah, that's crazy. And we're going to talk about that in a segment or two here. We got Carlton Huffman, GOP insider. And I want to, like, that has been interesting to me, of how they've rolled over and just like the people that should know better, that, you know, damn well, they know this is bad. They know this is not acceptable. I know I'm going to throw your friend under the bus, that Nancy Mace. She is a smart person. She knows better. But then, you know, she's doing this whole, like, why aren't we focusing on the economy? But you're focusing on the fact that you don't want a man going to the woman's bathroom. It's like, Nancy, what are we doing here? We got like 30 seconds left. But I don't understand that. Like Brian Stile, yes, we both know he knows better. Ron Johnson, he's an idiot. He's going to Ron Johnson. But there are people, even down to like the assembly and state senate races and representatives, they know better. And they know this is bad. And they know this is hurting people. But instead what they do, it's full steam ahead with the big snowplow on, damn the torpedoes, and they don't care. And that's something for me that's incredibly frustrating. And we're going to pick this up on the other side. We're going to talk about tariffs with Carlton Huffman here on the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network. Stick around.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. Thanks for sticking with us. Hey, so we've got my dear friend and yours, Carlton Huffman. We're talking about, you know, kind of what has surprised us and where things are that we didn't necessarily anticipate. And I want to talk about tariffs. And this is a tough one because I think that Democrats are not doing a real good job on this at all. First off, they have to understand that tariff is not necessarily a dirty word. There is a place for them. And Trump did this in his first term, but it wasn't like this drunken blasting every single freaking country into the Stone Age. And we have to understand that there is a massive trade deficit. Like, Trump's not wrong about that. And in his first term, some of those tariffs did work, and you could see the decrease in the trade inequity. So, I mean, like, it was strategic. It was run by competent people, comparatively speaking. But Carlton, your family is in the textile industry. So talk about these tariffs. What's going on?
Well, before we drill down, let me just back up and go big picture. So back in the 1990s, during the Clinton era, I mean, we were experiencing an era of almost unprecedented prosperity, but there was an embrace of this ideology that globalization was going to be the rising tide that lifted all boats, and that as we expanded our free trade deals with NAFTA and admitting China to the World Trade Organization, we assumed that this was going to not just benefit the United States, but it was going to benefit everybody in the rest of the world, and we were all going to be one big happy family. But when you have predatory actors like Beijing, who are basically looking to undercut American manufacturing, and we saw a wholesale just like flight out of the United States of a lot of this low-end manufacturing of a mass production level. And we were able to maintain an advantage in some of the specialty manufacturing items. But for the most part, especially in the textile industry and in the furniture industry and certain other retail areas, you just saw the rest of the world took us to the cleaners on that one. And that was by our mistake. It was not just that they were smarter than we were. We let it happen.
Yep.
And politicians on both sides, I mean, Barack Obama promised in 08 he was going to do something about NAFTA. And as much as I can point to good things that he did do, he was not. He was either unfaithful to that promise or just said it just to say it. But Trump, to his credit in the first term, decided to take on China in a strategic way. But looking to Trump 2.0, he basically is throwing everybody in the world under the bus. There is a great Lewis Black skit that talks about the United States basically running around saying, "I'm the greatest person here. All you people would die without me," and expecting the rest of the world to be happy for that fact. And instead, you have a Trump administration formula for tariffs that ChatGPT came up with. We're not making it like that. I wish I could say it was making it up. And we decided to throw tariffs on some unoccupied islands. They are uninhabited by human beings.
The penguins are pissed.
Yes. And you've got Australia, who we have a trade surplus with, which so technically under this formula, we should be paying them.
Right.
That is the absurdity of it all. And the thing that really just undercuts the United States is like, if we were doing this against Russia, if we were doing this against China and just them alone, we would have friends. We would have people willing to work with us on that one. And let's just also just back up to the fact that, because Trump is basically saying the economy was a hellscape, the Dow Jones and the stock market at all-time highs. Income was up at the end of the Biden administration.
Rates were going down.
The economy recovered, and Trump puts this on Liberation Day, and you see $6 trillion in the stock market go up in smoke, and you've got these MAGA influencers basically saying, "Hey, it's fake money." It's like, no, it's not. People paid to buy those stocks. People's 401ks were waiting to cash that out. So basically all these senior citizens basically had their money and their retirements wiped out arbitrarily just because Donald Trump seems to think that we should get rid of income taxes, but tariffs mean that somebody else is paying. When anybody who has taken Economics 101 knows somebody's got to pay, it is going to be the consumer. And he is putting all these costs on American consumers after we are already coming off of the worst inflation that we saw since Jimmy Carter.
It is remarkable how one man can tank every single major market index in the entire world single-handedly, you know?
Absolutely. And it was a crazy comparison that I saw to him. So you saw Liz Truss over there in England. She did a similar thing with the bond market. But probably the most apropos one was Mao Zedong, who basically tried to just reorient China's entire economy, but caused mass starvation as a result. Go ahead.
No, I said, whoops.
it caused the worst man-made famine in human history, but because he was an absolute ruler, he had no accountability. Thankfully, America, we might be standing on that banana peel on the way to authoritarianism, but we still had enough pressure to where Trump was willing to sit there and back off temporarily. But I still think in less than 90 days, we are in for it again. And as a 78 going on 79-year-old individual, he's not changing his mind. He is not going to sit there and back away from this.
I wonder, because I got a clip I'm going to play here for you momentarily. I wonder how much, you know, the pressure can help this come to an end. You know, because he is getting pressure from people that are in his own party, as I'm going to play for you right now.
Anyone who says there may be a little bit of pain before we get things right, need to talk to my farmers who are one crop away from bankruptcy.
I'm assuming this all got gamed out because it's a novel approach. It needed to be thought out. Whose throat do I get to choke if this proves to be wrong?
And we're talking to Carlton Huffman. That was your friend, Senator Tom Tillis. And we're seeing Republicans speak out like that now about these tariffs.
They're speaking out, and they definitely should, because as I said in the earlier segment, that farmers are getting hurt, and there's not much margin for them between either staying afloat or going under. And I would sit there and say you're seeing it in places like Iowa, where Joni Ernst is going to be up for re-election next year, where you see them getting squeamish. But at the end of the day, talk is one thing. What are you actually going to do in terms of using your powers of the purse, using your powers of confirmation holds over people? That's where the rubber meets the road in terms of being able to stop this. And that is going to be probably the biggest pressure on Republicans between now and next November, is how much this is going to hurt. And I can just sit here and say, we are only in the beginning stages. This stuff just started to kick in. So the full pain of it has not even truly been felt. And I can just sit here and say, we can look at China rightfully as a geopolitical adversary, but for better or worse, over the last three decades, our economies are as entwined as can be. And all of a sudden, just like full stop, basically, trade has almost completely ceased.
Yeah.
And China gets a vote in this.
Right. And it is remarkable, the things that are happening. You got to stick around, because on the other end, we're going to talk about slipping into that authoritarianism. Carlton Huffman, he's a constitutional expert, and you're going to want to hear what he has to say. So stick around to the Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Network. We've got one more segment here with my dear friend and yours, Carlton Huff. And by the way, this is going to be broadcast this weekend, so happy Easter to you. I know you're a big Easter guy. I hope you have a wonderful celebration with your family and all of that and friends. I wanted to really touch on this, because I think out of all of the things that, and you can pick a lot of things that are a concern about what Trump is doing, I think this particular one is probably the worst. And it's how close he's kind of getting to it, not kind of, how close he's getting to authoritarianism. For the party that loves free speech, and for the party that loves, you know, don't tread on me, don't tell me what to do, boy, do they hate people who like to speak out. We can see this week their war on Harvard. You know, the Justice Department wants like disciplinary records from students, and and this whole anti-DEI thing, that's disgusting. It's horrible. And like anti just about everything that all of the pillars of our country's founding would be against. You look at like Martin Luther King and all, like what's happening to that is disgusting. But slipping into authoritarianism is really, really scary, because that's not something you can come back from.
I wholeheartedly agree. And just as a reference to Easter and a fun, just a little funny anecdote, for Easter, Lent, I gave up chocolate and alcohol. And one of my friends said, I don't know how you can stay sober right here. I said with
no
on that one, but I can sit here and say, as far as just the slip into authoritarianism, I mean, he warned us, and we were all sitting here saying he warned us, but it's not just him, because the one thing you can sit there and say, you can have a crazy person wanting to do all these horrible things, but it is the acquiescence, and shouldn't just say acquiescence, but the endorsement of Republican voters.
Yes.
That is the biggest thing. And I can just sit here and say, Stuart Stevens, I'll give him a free book plug, but he wrote this great book, It Was All a Lie, because we convinced ourselves that it was about limited government.
Yeah.
It was about the Constitution. It was about all these things. But you can go back and research the conservative movement back to the 1960s. It was not about what we were for. It was about what we hated.
Yeah.
They hated the hippies. They hated the sexual revolution. They hated the gay rights movement. They hated a lot of the civil rights movement. They would basically do what they needed to do to give peons to those movements. But now, in the Trump era, once they got a hold of political power, we know it became about censorship. It became about burning books. It became about using the IRS to go after political adversaries, as we see they're doing with Harvard, not just withholding government funds. They're wanting to get rid of their tax-exempt status.
Yeah.
We see them basically, when even not Antonin Scalia, God rest his soul, but Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, whenever they sit here and are part of a 9-0 decision that the gentleman from Maryland that they mistakenly deported to El Salvador should come home, when even Clarence Thomas and Alito are saying that and Trump defies them, we are in very dangerous territory.
Yeah.
And the fact that we are seeing law firms basically being extorted to give free legal services to the Trump administration's select causes, and then you see all these news networks that are in lawsuits with Trump settle with him before he even takes off.
Oh, my God.
All the pillars of civil society that keep this system in check with checks and balances, those balances are wavering. And I will sit here and say it right here today. I believe if he thinks he can get away with it, he will seek a third term. And I don't sit there and say that that's hyperbole. He himself has said it, and everybody used to sit there and say, oh, Trump's just trolling the libs.
Right.
He's sitting there trying to make them mad. It's like everything that he has said that he wanted to do, he has at least tried to do it. He tried to overturn an election 4 years ago, and not too many people took him seriously to think that not seize absolute power if he could do it. And we see him palling around with El Salvador's self-proclaimed coolest dictator ever. But with every single democratically elected leader that were once friends of the United States, he has nothing but contempt and scorn for them. So, and I hate to sit there and say it, but on a geopolitical level, America is no longer the good guy in the world.
No.
And the fact that it took less than 100 days for that reality to change just says a lot about the direction of this president and the fact that the people who used to be the guardrails to try and rein him in, they are either out of the administration or they have acquiesced and just said they're going to go along to get along.
How long will it take for us? I mean, obviously Trump's got to get the hell out of there, but how long is that going to take to repair those relationships? Because I mean, we are just firebombing everything.
I mean, the relationships that we built were basically the product of 80 years.
Yes, since World War freaking II.
And they were carefully cultivated. And we can sit there and say there were friction points during the Cold War. There were friction points whenever we decided to go into Iraq the second time.
Of course, yeah.
But at the end of the day, the Danes were there for us. They suffered more casualties fighting in the War on Terror than any other country, including ours, in terms of their population. And what are we attempting to do? We're sitting there saying, we're going to take Greenland, want to or not.
Right.
And saying to the Canadians, you're going to be our 51st state. Well, in the War of 1812, that did not work out quite so well for everyone tried that. And when you have a country that was willing to fight and die alongside us in the hills of Afghanistan and on the fields of Iraq, booing the national anthem with zeal, that just tells you how much this administration has torched our relationships around the world. And I can sit there and say, when Barack Obama was president, I think he was on a glide path just ignoring the rest of the world. But there's a difference between ignoring the rest of the world and doing, as you said earlier, just flipping the bird to basically one, except for the people who are once our adversaries, like China, like Russia. And you could sit there and say, well, we're throwing tariffs on China to the point that there's no trade between us, but we are basically undercutting all of our alliances that held China in, and China is taking full advantage of that fact.
Well, you know, I look at the relationships that we have from, you know, yeah, being involved with from George W. Bush and Africa, trying to help them with AIDS and USAID and all of the things that we were part of, and the savings. We haven't done jack squat except hurt ourselves and the people that we depend on most, are farmers and business owners and all that. And for what?
Basically, except on the lips. To satisfy the ego of one man. And to your earlier question, how long will it take Joe Biden a lot of his flaws? I could sit there and say he and his administration earnestly sought to rebuild relationships around the world that were strained, not even as fully as they have been in the last 90 days. But for 4 years, those relationships were strained. But Joe Biden did everything that he could to repair those relationships and to make America a leader again in the world. And we see, the American people, for better or worse, elected Donald Trump again. And so the rest of the world does not trust us. And I can sit there and say, I did some work with some overseas entities, and they are just sitting there going, WTF.
Y'all. Yeah. Well, we're talking with Carlton Huffman, GOP insider. And what I think is frustrating is all of these tariffs, the companies that are affected, you know, you talk about the overseas folks, it's going to cost them so much money to move everything to the States and move all, and all they got to do is just wait it out for 3 years. Well, it's going to suck for a little while, but then they're just going to go right back. So none of this is actually going to help. It's going to truly, truly hurt the American family and businesses. This is ridiculous.
I mean, the big power corporations like Apple, like Amazon, they can weather this.
Oh, God, yeah.
But the Main Street small business folks that, just like textile industry in my case and other cases around the country, you're still getting parts and materials from almost every corner of the world. You're not going to make it. And so many small businesses are not going to make it, which just goes against everything that they sit there and said, that we're just going to bring manufacturing back to the United States. Well, all these car companies around the world, they are looking at it. It's cheaper to go to Mexico. It's even cheaper to go to Europe with all the supposed regulations and big government that they have over there. It is easier for them to look elsewhere. And just to pivot from the economic side of view to the political side of view, basically all these political parties around the world that are anti-United States or anti-populist, they're the ones in the driver's seat right now. Canada, like Trudeau's party was looking like it was dead.
Yeah.
And now it's going to turn around and probably win in a big margin in the Canadian election. And you saw J.D. Vance go over to Europe and pal around with neo-Nazis and neo-fascists.
Right.
For them to get trounced at the polls in Germany. But what does that say to the Europeans? What does that say to democratic forces around the world where we are no longer going to stand with Ukraine? We are no longer going to stand with our democratic allies. We look at Saudi Arabia, we look at Turkey, we look at China and Russia and say, that's who we want to be as Americans.
What do the Democrats and what do they have to do to stop this? I mean, especially the slow march towards authoritarianism that, I mean, we're close to a darn constitutional crisis just about every day. Like, what can they do?
I mean, you saw what Cory Booker did, and it was one of those things that a lot of people sit there and say, well, he didn't change a vote, he did not overturn an election, but it's like, you have to set the stage of sitting there saying that, okay, America, we got the message that open borders were not a success, and checking people if they use the wrong pronouns is not a success. That we have to basically say, all these cultural fights, I'm not saying surrender on them, but I'm like, you've got to deprioritize those. You have to sit there and say, for these Republicans who voted for Trump because they hope for a better economy, if you acknowledge the mistake that you made, we're going to lock arms with you. We need to see Democrats win in Virginia and New Jersey this November, and that will send the warning flare to the Republicans in Congress. you need to change your ways. And when the Republicans go for this huge tax cut bill, which they are trying to push through, which will spike the deficit by $4 trillion over 5 years. This is something, and cut Medicare by $800 billion.
Yeah.
You have to mess on these issues to sit there and show voters how this is going to hurt. And that might peel enough Republicans away to tank some of these initiatives. And as they lose political altitude, Trump will have to pare back some of those ambitions. But even if they push through some of these things legislatively, it will spark the resistance to do what they need to do at the ballot box. And we have to win the House, and we have to do whatever we can do in Wisconsin and around the country. Retain the governor's mansions that you have and take back the ones that you have lost. That will set the stage for 2028, where if Trump decides to go for a third term or if J.D. Vance is in the driver's seat, we have shown America the hellscape that has been the Trump administration, and the Democrats can then offer something better as an alternative.
Well, it's like we can never do this again.
Never, yeah. Never.
You know, and it's funny. So, like, I mean, I invite Republicans on the show, and to be fair, Carthen is not a Democrat. You know, just for people that are listening, that is not him. But I think that there are. I was in a room full of Democrats this past week talking about what they need to do and what we need to do. And I said, you have to have an open heart. You have to understand and accept people that might not have been there the whole time and might not, you know, think the same thing that you do on every single thing, because these issues, they're too important. And the issues are, you know, authoritarianism, free speech, true freedom. And I think that there's, I don't know, you know, we got just a couple seconds left. I don't know if what the future is for the Republican Party, if there even is one.
I want to say it has gone MAGA and probably will remain so for the rest of yours in my lifetime.
Really? You think it's gone?
Unless they receive such a beating at the ballot box over the next few elections, wow, got no choice but to change, like the Democrats dealt with that back in the 19th.
Right.
Unless
on.
They're going to continue.
Carlton Huffman, thank you so much for coming. I appreciate you, brother. Always good to see you. Love you, man. Stick Love around. You got my thoughts here after this. And appreciate your time, Carlton, here on Rational Revolution on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Yes! Oh, goodness. Thanks for sticking around. You know, I still am a little new to this whole radio thing. I love getting tips and advice. And I got a couple emails from my guy, affectionately called Todd the God. You know, and he's like, reset your guests and make sure to mention the Civic Media Network. And I do very much appreciate the Civic Media Network and everyone that lets this program be possible, because I do think it's important. And to have some hard discussions about some interesting things. And I want to talk about a different hard discussion and something that is a little poignant, a little timely, and it's faith. I touched on it. You know, this program is going to be aired on Easter weekend. And so for those who celebrate, happy Easter. And I want to talk about what is faith, right? And I grew up in a very Catholic household, and this is not a slight to my parents or anything like that. I mean, I think they did a wonderful job. They did the best they could, and I love them very much. And I loved growing up in that Catholic faith because, you know, there was so much that it taught me. It taught me humility and taught me to love other people, and it taught me, you know, to never let the highs get too high, because then the lows can't get too low, right? And it was, we had some amazing faith leaders at the church I grew up in, with Father Paul DeMuth and Bishop Bob Morneau and Deacon Mike Greca. I mean, there's so many people that were pillars in my life growing up that I can look at. But when you grow up, you kind of learn to think critically and learn to open your eyes and hear what's around you and all of that. And for me, I have left the Catholic faith. It's really hard to believe the story of, you know, Mary got pregnant by God, and because I know that's not how that works. And, you had to have a son, and Jesus had to die because God had to, you know, send Jesus to hell to forgive of the original sin where Adam and Eve, or Eve took the apple from the talking snake and all. Like, it's a hard thing to believe. And I admire people that do. Because I wish that it was true. I so desperately want it to be true because, you know, we, for so long, we as humans look at life and be like, oh, there's got to be more to it, right? This can't be it. This can't be it. There's got to be more. What happens when you go? It's such a difficult question to wrap your arms around, you know, and we struggle to do that. And also when you grow up, you start seeing people use those teachings that I grew up learning. And I taught Sunday school. You know, we were involved in our church. Oh God, we would go to church like twice a week. From my dad directed the church choir. My mom was the liturgist, so she planned the masses. And my mom still works there. And my brother's the maintenance guy there. And so, like, I mean, we're still very connected to that community. And then, but then you see people using those lessons that we learned and that I loved as a weapon to hate other people for being who they are, who they love. And even worse, well, that's bad, but also using it as a way to take money from people. You look at Paula White, and I saw this clip that she had some stupid, like, live stream televangelist BS where she was telling people, oh, for just a simple gift of $1,000, you get your own personal angel sent down and you're going to get prosperity and you're going to do, it's like, holy crap. Like, people believe this, right? And so people believe that, and it's, I mean, it's the greatest story ever told, right? And like I said, I want it to be true. I desperately want it to be true. My eyes are open and my ears are open, but all I see and all I hear is what's here and what's around me. So what is faith? I think when you look at it, one of the greatest acts of faith you can have is to put your head down on the pillow at night and have faith that you're going to be there when you wake up, right? Like, well, I hope to see you tomorrow. Like, what an act of faith it is to lay down and go to bed. And how pure and perfect and beautiful it is to wake up the next day. And I'm not necessarily thankful to some creator out there, but I'm thankful because I get to see the people that I love the most. And I get to be with them for another day and talk to them and hug them and love them. What a beautiful thing that is. And I'm so grateful for that time, for every day. You know, the Catholic faith talked about gratitude and showing gratitude. And it's, I think it's a really amazing thing to not show gratitude to some creator, but to take that gratitude and that love and give it to the people that you, that mean the most, so you can be with them, love them, fight for them, and know that, like, what you do is not for some afterlife, not for some land of milk and honey, but it's to make the people that you're with, make their lives better. And the God that I knew growing up, if you lived your life that way, if you were a good person, if there's something there for you, you're going to be there. But if there's not, then what you did today, you made people's lives better. So if you celebrate, happy Easter. If you don't, happy day. Have a good one. Make sure you love people, fight for people, and hug those people that mean the most. Love you guys. Appreciate you listening to The Rational Revolution here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Mark Becker. We'll see you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.